joining our show today.
Blog Talk Radio.
I am your host, Wanda McKinley, along with your co-host, Stephanie Kennedy Alford. I am the founder of We Are Survivors, which is a nonprofit organization. Our purpose is to provide stable environment for abused and battered men, women, and children by providing them temporary shelter, counseling, and employment training. We want to help women transition from abusive situations, as well as men, to being self-sufficient individuals in society. We Are Survivors' vision is to empower women and to show them that they can and will survive and thrive in society on their own, as well as to also uplift them, including the men, and provide them a new life and what a new perspective of a normal life should be by enhancing and elevating them. I'm a survivor of domestic violence. I was raped from the age of 7 to 18 by my biological father as well as my stepfather. My ex-husband was also abusive. He was sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive, and I was with him for 12 years. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help other men, women, and children who have walked or may still be walking in my shoes. Hello, Stephanie. How are you doing today? I'm good. You must be in a bad area because you sound like a robot almost. Are you there? Okay, it sounds like, yeah, you sound like a robot almost. Okay. I guess if you hang up and try back, but while you're doing that, I'll go ahead and go over our fundraising events that we have. One of them is our Kroger card. You can go into any Kroger's and actually ask for or go online to sign up to attach We Are Survivors to your Kroger card. So any items that you purchase, We Are Survivors will actually get a percentage of what you buy while shopping at Kroger's, as well as Tom Thumb. Those fundraising events are, of course, free. There is no additional charge for that. And for Kroger's, I can give you, if you go online to attach your Kroger card to We Are Survivors, the code is 21490. Again, for Kroger's, it's 21490. As well as Tom Thumb. Tom Thumb's code is 13451. That is the code to attach We Are Survivors. Also, we have a CPN card, which is, I believe it's $15. And that CPN card allows you to have a lot of different discounts at several different vendors. And it comes in handy. You actually, it's really worth the one-time charge of the $15. Another fundraising opportunity that we have is Compass Bank. Compass Bank, if you are a Compass Bank, holder or vendor or person that has Compass Bank account, our code for them is 113631. And what Compass Bank does is whatever you buy, whatever you purchase, your everyday expenses, your gas, your food, your going out, you're buying clothes, whatever it is that you love to do, your shopping, a percentage of that money that you spend will go to We Are Survivors. These are things that you can do that doesn't even cost you extra money. It's just a simple, maybe 5 minutes of your time, if that much, to link up these cards that you use on a day-to-day basis. Also, we have called a Purple City Project. It's a domestic violence awareness photo shoot campaign. And the photographer's name is Charles, a.k.a. City. And he has four different packages. I'll go over the top two, which is the $55 package, which is valued at $100. It's a 20-minute session for up to four people, unlimited shots. You get one look. So, ladies, that's one outfit. And two edits, which means no matter how many pictures he takes, you get to pick two, and those are two that he will edit and you get to take home. The second package is an $80 package, which is valued at $160. It's a 45-minute session, up to four people, unlimited shots, two looks, which constitutes for two outfits, and four edits, which means you get to pick out four outfits. You can wear four outfits, and after all of these amazing pictures that he takes, you get to try and narrow it down to four. I had the privilege of actually doing this, and I took, well, I should say he snapped 303 pictures, which was amazing to see all of those different poses and facial expressions. So it's really fun. And if you don't have anything purple, then he provides a purple backdrop because the theme is domestic violence awareness. So those right now are currently our fundraising events. Since we are talking about fundraising events, I'm going to skip over to our second annual fundraising benefit. Each year we want to try and do something different. Last year we did a luncheon, and it was a wonderful experience. This year I want to do something totally different, and hopefully every year we're going to be just as creative and do something totally different. And we're going to do a informational and paint event. And it's going to be at Picasso's Pizzeria, which is in Addison, off the Toll in Frankfort. I'm really excited about this event. We're going to have some Dallas police officers come out and talk about domestic violence. The ticket price is going to be $50, but that $50 includes some very great information. It is going to be food. There's going to be music, there's going to be games, there's going to be a, I'm not going to tell you what the painting is going to be, but that also includes your painting supplies, your easel, your apron, your brushes, and your finished product, which is the painting that you will be painting at this event that you get to take home in remembrance of your second annual benefit that you participated in with We Are Survivors. So that will be August 20th. I want to go ahead and start talking about that because that is really important for us to raise funds and to get things up and going so that we can provide help for individuals that call and need it. June 21st, which is on a Tuesday, We Are Survivors is part of a fashion show. That is at Hilton Garden Inn to raise money regarding scholarship. The ticket price for that is $30. That is including your meal and a lot of different great vendors. We Are Survivors was a part of that last year. So I'm really honored to be asked to come back to participate in it again. August 13th, we have My Sister's Keeper. It's a unity party. Right now, I don't think there's a price that has been attached to that. So that is on a Saturday, and that's August 13th. Also, I once again want to reiterate August 20th, which is our annual. August 25th through the 27th, We Are Survivors has been asked to come and speak in Finland at the International Women's Conference. So we are looking forward to that. I also want to add that We Are Survivors has been asked to become part of a tour of Africa. More details to come with that. We did accept, and I'm honored and elated. September 24th, we have United in Fight Conference. I know that will be held at, I believe, at the Dallas Library downtown. So as the time gets closer to that, we will give more details. October 1st will be our first quarterly Women's Empowerment Gathering. That, again, will be at Picasso's Pizzeria, the same place that we're having our annual. We have decided to do these Empowerment Women Gatherings, and it could be men as well. And we're going to do it quarterly. And by doing this quarterly, that's time for us to get together, exhale, have fun, talk, and discuss everyday life and what's going on. Then we have October 22nd, which is Granny's Place Conference, which is held at Free Will Baptist Church in Duncanville. And as soon as that becomes, more information becomes available for that, we will definitely give out more information. And I looked over one for July. July 23rd is Celebrate Life Afternoon Delight, and that is through Silent Screams. That is another nonprofit organization that assists sexual assaulted individuals that are not quite ready to speak out about their trauma. So we have Silent Screams that actually speaks for those who cannot speak for themselves. There are a lot of survivors that still cannot talk about their ordeal. And so that organization is wonderful because they have a lot of resources for those individuals who are seeking help, but like I said once again, yet not able or ready to come out and speak. Now, as I've gotten all of the announcements out of the way, and I'm pretty sure as time goes on, they will grow because we are survivors, and I just thought about one. And there are some that I will also include next week because I don't have them in front of me. There are several different activities that are coming about for our children in our community. And because school is out, we want to keep our kids out of trouble and active so that they will not become part of the juvenile system. That is very important. And I know our parents work throughout the day. So because our parents work throughout the day, they're not necessarily aware of what their children are doing. We Are Survivors has asked to partner up with several individuals here in the Dallas County, the Dallas community, and I'm really excited about the opportunity and the people that are involved. And we're still working on some details, but I can tell you that we have individuals. We have Granny's Place, which is actually the sponsor of our radio show. They are a part of this wonderful movement. GQ Movers, they are a moving company that is on Facebook and are doing a lot of different things in the community. Roads to Success, that is a nonprofit organization that is catered around young men, football. The founder is Dominique Rhodes. He is a retired Super Bowl champion of 2007. When he was with the Colts, he was in the NFL for 9 years. He's also a part of the team My Neighbor's House, PAL, which is Dallas Police Department's Athletic and Activities League, and the wonderful Miss Edna Pemberton. So far, those are the people that are on this team, as long as We Are Survivors, on this team that are putting together a summer outreach program for our youth. And as it comes together, you all will be hearing more information about it. Definitely next Thursday we'll have more information because the official start date is Tuesday of next week. So there'll be plenty of pictures. Plenty of entertainment, education, one-on-one interaction with parents as well as children. So if you're not followers on Facebook for We Are Survivors, now is the time to see what's going on, see what we're doing in the community, see who God has linked us up with because we are doing major things in the city of Dallas. And I believe that is all of our announcements for the day. I want to
share what Sergeant Martin had said that will be coming out shortly about the felons. Anybody that had a felony that didn't have an ID. For giving information. So that, you know, the programs that they're going to be rolling out to help people get jobs. He wants to make sure that we get a list and get him the list of people that do not. He said, you know, so often people think that they only, you know, want to put people in jail. They're not looking to put people in jail. They want a list of all the people that do not have a ID or a driver's license so that they can help them get, you know, ID. So anybody in the Dallas area, he wants a list so that he can help, you know, so that they can help you get ID so that when they roll the program out to help people get jobs, they want to make sure that you have an ID.
Yes, and this is for felons. I think a felon was messing up in the beginning. This is for felons. Any felons that do not have proper identification, and because you do not have proper identification, you cannot be employed. So the Dallas Police Department is coming up. They do have a new program where they are looking for felons that are serious about working and need proper ID. And I do not have Sergeant Martin's phone number. And yes, I do. I'm sorry. As Kimberly said, I do not, but I remember it's in my other phone. So I'm going to look that information up to give that information, his phone number, to you so that if you can or know somebody that would benefit from this, please feel free to give Sergeant Martin a phone call. And his number is 214-605-1557. Again, that's if you know anyone that has a felon, felony and is a felon, and is looking for work but cannot get work because of they don't have the proper identification, please give Sergeant Martin a call, and his number is 214-605-1557. And as Stephanie has reminded me, when we get information about different programs that the City of Dallas is offering through the people in our contacts, we will definitely share that information with you. Did I forget anything else, Stephanie?
I don't think so.
Okay. We had a meeting this past, when was that? Tuesday or Wednesday? Tuesday, I believe, of this week. And I know we'll be meeting up really soon because, like I said, the program begins Tuesday for our young kids and their families. So, like I said, if you're not friends and following me or Stephanie or We Are Survivors, send out an invite to the group so that way you can follow and see what's going on in the community as we grow and gather data and information for the community. We will also share. Now, after again all of those announcements, we have Sweetened back again this week. This is part three. He is the first. We've had someone come on twice in a week, twice back to back. But we've never had someone's story be so in-depth that they've come back for a third. And depending on how it goes this week, we might have to finish it out next week. This is the first. But I am a firm believer, because I am a survivor, that it is important to talk about in depth what you experienced, because it is part of our healing process. It does help us to acknowledge what we've gone through, and it helps. I know it helps me personally to identify why I am the way I am today, or why I have been the way I was in the past, and why I handle things the way I did. It has helped me put a mirror to my face in so many different ways, because now I understand a lot better who I am, why I am the way I am. And it helps me also to deal with everyday life and situations. Now, I know him and I talked, and I wrote down where he left off. But I'm first saying, Mr. Sweeten, thank you. And I didn't put a miss in front of your first name, but I am just thankful that you're taking the time out of your schedule, not 1 week, not 2 weeks, but the third week in a row, to enlighten us of how you survived and what you went through as a child leading up into your adulthood. Thank you very much. And before you say something, I also am excited to announce that once we get through with his segment, his wife has also agreed to follow up and share her story, because not only is he a survivor, she is also a survivor. So I'm honored and I'm thankful. And welcome, sweetie. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. How are you, Ms. Wanda?
I am good. As you can hear, we're really busy and we're excited about what God has us doing. And I just want you to keep sharing, keep educating us, keep letting us know that, you know, every when I hear someone else's story, it floors me. When someone hears my story, it floors them. But the amazing thing is we all have something in common and that God brought us through it so that we can share it and tell other people what we have survived and to let other people know that they too can survive. So I'm going to stop talking and allow you to take it from here.
No problem, no problem. The last note that you did write down where we left off, where was that? Just to make sure we're on the
using
same
people,
page.
Yes, using people to get what you want.
Yeah, utilizing myself when it came towards the sexual behavior. I noticed that it was more so almost like prostituting myself, but just in a masculine form. I already liked the dress. I already, you know, loved shoes, you know, being the fact that I didn't grow up with them. So, you know, being a young kid with money and the money that I was making, it was already easy because I liked the clothes that I already liked. And they was expensive, but now I have money and I can buy more. And the ones that, as people would call themselves, the label whores, or, you know, everything is, if it isn't the polos or the Roberto Cavallis, then it has to be up. And now we're going into the Buscemi's and the Versace's and, you know, all of those type of things. And I was wearing those type of clothes. And I was attracting ones that, you know, the ones that didn't, so say they didn't like heavy set guys or chubby guys or whatever they want to call it, to the point where I thought I was doing that to attract them when I was really selling myself. And like I said from the last time, every time when the climax had ended, it took me to a place where I just didn't understand what was going on and the feelings that I was having. And it wasn't that I didn't like what I was doing before the climax. It just, it triggered, I guess, so much of what happened from the past. But I didn't deal with it. I just kept going along with every year, every day, selling myself. What new Jordan or shoe can I buy? Or staying up with the fashion, but which wasn't hard because I already liked the dress. And I still do to this day. but also learning how to use the baiting game instead of using candy. I also learned how to bait with emotion. Or you bait with questions. If a girl asked, you know, do you give order to girls, or have you ever received over, and those type of questions, just to see where their head was at, and not even understand that I was baiting and selling myself every time. And when I realized that, it was kind of almost, not too late, but it was kind of too late emotionally in coming into the adulthood. But it was between that 15, well, really around 14, all the way to between 17 and 18, it was rapid. It was so many. And then so many that was repeated as well. Because it wasn't about, I mean, of course it was about who I was with. It had to be through an attracting eye, of course. But it was also about the feeding. The feeding of what I think is doesn't have to be fed, but, you know, the greed, the lust of the feeling, which is also the same thing to a person that is a pedophile. But it's just, I'm dealing with my age range. I'm dealing with people that's kind of on my mental state.
Right.
And as I'm selling myself, though, I saw so many females that were selling themselves. So while I'm thinking that I'm, I guess I can say the wildest part is realizing that it's two broken souls having sex with each other, and they don't even know that they're broken. And that's the worst type of energy you can kind of, you know, combine with, even on an intimate level. And it was just happening so rapid, left and right. Certain days, you know, I would take a break with myself like it was a obligation that I had to do this every day. And I got tired of it, of course, and it didn't drown me out, but it was more so saying that, you know, I experienced everything in my life before college hit, but, you know, college came and it was doing the same thing. And now, you know, you're dealing with this women that's all the way from the age range from 19 to all the way not even being funny from 30 years old. And that was a whole nother type of game, a different type of jungle that it was still easy for me to walk through, one, for the fact that what has happened to me in the past. And then I learned certain techniques to use, whether it's certain times to use your emotions, certain times just to use your physicalness, you know, the way you look, your energy, your aura, your, I guess what the kids call it today, is swag.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it was just that. And not knowing, you know, every time that I wasted my time, not saying wasting, but selling myself, you know, going to the club to buy the bottles and all of that, just to see who can attract and who can I take on. That was just, when you really look at it on a masculine, you know, in this world, oh, man, you're the man. But really on an emotional level, it's like I'm broken. And I'd rather not choose any of these women, and I'd rather keep going down the same cycle. And I saw that also in the same cycle of my parents, because they, you know, also had infidelity within their relationship. So, being on top of what happened to me as a child, also seeing that in front of me, it just made it as if I was supposed to be a rabbit and just going around and just rabbit humping everybody. And I kind of remember just getting depressed about it, but it didn't stop. It just didn't stop. It kind of wouldn't stop in a way either. The minute that you know, they say the devil come in all different type of shapes and sizes. So, you know, you'll get a text from a person that you haven't saw in 2 or 3 years, or you'll get pictures, or it was just so much of those things. And when you really look at the lifestyle that I was living, you'll more so think, well, you sound like a man that's a young man that should be, you know, in his late 20s or early or late 30s. And here I am just a teenager, you know, just living wild, wild and free. But I was definitely smart. You know, I definitely used protection a lot. So, you know, I never really worried too much, but at the same time I did worry. And it just became into that. When I stopped that, because I would go through spurts too, even through high school, I noticed it around 16 and 17 when I was trying to learn how to control myself, I got more angry. I just didn't know what to do with none of my feelings because of being molested and being physically abused so much. And then, you know, the drugs and the deaths and the murders, and I just didn't know what to do. And like I said, I just never had a lifestyle where I can talk to my parents and tell them how I'm feeling, being the fact that I was always in fear of being abused. So it just turned into a lot of aggression and anger. To the point where the games that I was playing in high school was hurting people. Playing like I'm playing an actual game of football and tackling people in the middle of the hallway as hard as I can, and just running in the hallway and hitting people and picking fights. It became bad. And I wasn't just fighting. When I fought, it was kind of like the reflection of what I understand what the cop felt when he asked my mother who died in the apartment. Because I was beating people up like grown men. And I just still never dealt with it. So when I figured that at that age, oh, if I just have sex every day, I won't be so angry. And no, this is more than that. So like I said, around that 16 or 17, I started really noticing that, you know, my problems is more from my past than my actual present.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept showing reflection through anger and just pain and hatred and all of those things. But it just still wouldn't stop. And I don't know if I did it because of trying to keep up the reputation of being the jock or the cool guy in school or the popular. But it was, you know, now that I'm older, I say that it was just very degrading time on myself.
I don't know if your mouth is close to your phone, but there's times when you sound muffled.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so it was just at times where I, you know, look at it now, it was a degrading point in my life. Of course, it was times of feeling like it was fun, but it was more so an action of what I was taught of being young and not
right.
Dealing with it either and not having anyone talk to me about it and how to actually approach that situation when it's that time. I didn't have that birds and the bees talk. I was more so, I guess, either being one of the birds or the bees. And instead of showing me what it does and what birds and bees do or what it's supposed to do with the flowers, I was already
right.
Getting that introduction at 5 and 6 years old the wrong way.
I understand that. Yes.
So it does a lot, definitely, and I can't speak for women, but it, you know, like I said, definitely for men, now that I'm older, it definitely does a lot for a man that grew up like that, and then they kind of have to keep that secret because they know how other men look at you when you want to talk about that. Not me. I don't really care who's around or what's around me when I speak my truth because it heals me. But
right.
The people that do care about what other people say, those are ones that drive them insane because they don't speak openly about it. Or just to say what happened to them or just to heal themselves in any process. They don't take any initiative in that whatsoever. So it's hard to live in this type of society and still want to call yourself, you feel like a man, but then all of these things have happened to you to degrade you. So, you know, like I said, it just never stopped. It just didn't. And I kind of started slowing down around 19. But in the midst of all of this, even the sexual activity, I was still selling a lot of drugs. So no matter where I wanted to get away from sexual activity, the drugs were bringing sexual activity too. Whether it was the marijuana, whether it was in my generation back then, ecstasy just hit from in the 98 to the 2000 round. And that was one of those popular things. And even with that, I felt myself, that's another bait on not necessarily pedophile mind as an action, but pedophile mind state, because you would give a girl or even guys or girls a pop the ecstasy pills, and the minute you want to do is start touching all on each other, because that's what it gives you, one of those type of euphoria feelings, and you want to be touched. So in your mindset, you already think, well, if I give her this, I already know later on I can do what I want to do, or da 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 da, because that's the bait. So I do remember in the first interview when I said, you know, baiting comes in all types of different forms of candy. And it's not just the uncle or the cousin giving the little cousin or the nephew a piece of chocolate to come upstairs in the room. It's different forms of candy, whether it's through drugs, alcohol, emotions, the actual candy, the toys, the love, the money. There's so many ways of baiting, and people don't have no idea that we are all doing it. People that don't even, people that's not even, that haven't even been molested are doing things in a pedophile mind state. The guys that go to the club and buy bottles and bait for the women to come to them just to see who's going to go and have sex with. That's baiting.
Wow.
But people never put it in their mindset.
Right, never thought of it like that.
And, you know, you're dressing up. A woman looks at a man, or a man looks at a woman. She got tight clothes on, still fitting, and but the attributes are there. Of course, he's going to bite his bait. That can be through his own perception too. Now, you can bait your own self. And like I said, I was baiting my own self too. The way that I was dressing, dressing the way that I did, or I'll go to a certain spot, buy shoes, and pull out all of this wild money. Knowing that, not trying to be funny, I have nothing but hundreds of fifties in here anyway, so why am I acting like I got fives and tens? And the first girl, ooh, girl, look. All right, so I'm going to stand out here at the mall. I'm going to buy four or five pairs of shoes, see who follow me or walk with me up here to the eatery when I go grab some eating, who talks to me. That's baiting.
Right. It is.
Some people even go out here, and some people go out here and work so hard just to have good jobs and fast cars just so they can bait, and they don't even understand pedophile mind state. Here's another way. For boys to be in adults, they say we have to be 21 years old. Why do girls, women have to be 18? No one ever asked that question. But that sure is a baiting way for a law for a grown 36-year-old man and 40 and 50 to get a nice, fresh 18-year-old girl. She's a woman at 18, right? So she's paying bills and have a house and a mortgage, and she's doing taxes and all of those things at 18. I mean, there are some out there, but no.
Not many.
Mind state? No. Baiting. The whole lifestyle is about baiting. They did it in slavery. They did it in, they do it in, not trying to be funny, you can even be baited without having an actual intercourse. You can be baited into a religion. You can be baited into a society, into a stereotype, into a mindset. There's so many ways of baiting, and people don't see the pervertedness in it. And that's what caught my eye for me to stop doing what I was doing. Then it was, then I started understanding the actual ones that, oh, they're really just attracted to me, and not, oh, I could be a good person in bed, but I don't care for him or the way he looks, but he got money. It's two different ways, man. I'm starting to understand the communication. And in society, when it made me think about that, we have, well, not we, but I had to really take a pause back and say, where did we all learn this type of behavior from? And it doesn't have to necessarily always be from molestation, but when you put the similarities together, I mean, you can't deny it. We all done it, or we have done it, or some are still doing it. And that was my motto of this growing up. It was either dealing with the girls with the sex and then drugs. And, of course, you know, having a clothing store and buying, I wanted to always make it look pretty and not make it seem like I'm just some cutthroat little child that you shouldn't just trust. Because I wasn't a type of person. I wasn't into robberies and breaking in. And now I've gotten to those later on. We'll get into that because I'm getting close to the adulthood now. But that just wasn't my motto. So it was just getting the money from that standpoint in there. But living where I was at the time, too, it was a hard thing because me growing up in the city, you're only used to as we say, the Kiki's and the Tiffany's and the, you know what I mean, to where I was moving now, you have Laura's and Caitlin's. And
mm-hmm.
So now it's more baiting of, oh, I want to try this and I want to try that. And another perverted way of thinking. Another perverted way of thinking. So I had to realize too, it does, your if you have been through any type of sexual abuse, yes, it's going to play a part of what you do when you interact with any person. And you may not even know it. You may not even know it at times. But if people have to, you know, break the situation down, look on the outside and see what it's really meant for, and that's what it is. But taking away that, like I said, around 17, graduation comes. So, you know, now I'm not going to school no more. And I have 8 hours in the day to do whatever I want and then go to work. So what can I do? 8 hours of the day. Call my cousin and have orgies and threesomes. And,
wow.
And it would literally be all day.
Wow.
All day to the point of having pain in your genitalia area. Can't go to work. Or I was too drunk or too high. And I know I should stop. But it just, I couldn't stop. So now I'm more angry at myself because I realize the molestation has taken over me. But I'm not molesting the people that I'm being involved with. I'm really molesting myself. Because it's something that I should have not done when I should have dealt with it and just either talk to myself. My grandmother said it's okay to talk to yourself sometimes. And or reached out to someone. But I was in a position where, like I said in the first meeting, I am the black sheep of my family still to this day. So I had no one to call or to talk to. I didn't know anything about going to get insurance at that time because I was, of course, under my mom's and still 17. But she didn't care about my health to that extent. So I had the pain and that vulnerability and the crying and all of that on the inside. But I walk outside, oh, sweating, oh, man, big, tough, jock guy. Oh, I know he got the girls, or as we say, the bees. And then,
mm-hmm.
Man, let's go smoke. And da 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 da. And I was just throwing my life away, 8 hours of the day, every day.
Wow.
Every day. It was, I'll never forget of one time being in a shootout of making a transaction to go pick up drugs. But, it wasn't between us. It just so happened to be some other rivals. And as I'm inside the building, I can think about nothing but here I am trying to get home to have sex with the two girls that my cousin hooked me up with. And my cousin literally looked at me, and I never forget. He said, man, what are you doing? And I told him, I said, man, I understand, you know, why we have guns in our hand and all. But I'm trying to get home so we can da da da. He looked at me and said, dude, are you serious? You in the midst of dying right now, and you're thinking about
your mindset from your abuse.
And
wow.
I had to change. And that was when the struggle really started, around 17 turning into 18. Because I already had the values of a man, of an older man. I can cook because my grandmother taught me how to cook very well. I mean, all the way down from smothered chicken, hot water cornbread, to the Spanish food, to fried cabbage. I mean, I can really cook. And I know how to iron because a Virgo, most men Virgos, not the women, but most men Virgos are definitely want to be tidy and know where their stuff is at. So I definitely love to clean, wash dishes, don't have a problem doing clothes, iron. So I, even my grandmother basically raised me to the point where I didn't need a woman but for one thing, which I still think is not the proper mindset for a man, because I come from a woman. So I can't just need a woman for one thing when that woman, I needed that woman for everything at one point in time in my life, whether it was the nutrients, whether it was her balance or chemicals in her body. I needed all of that for me to become who I am outside the womb. So I didn't like that mindset either. And it was just going through the changes of trying to be a man at 18 and still wanting to be 18. So I would battle through still selling drugs, of course, because the money had to keep coming in. But I would still shop. But I would try to take away myself from the females, but I would still involve myself in places like the mall, or, you know, being that I played in a band all my life, I was able to go into clubs from the age of 12 all the way up. So it was nothing for me to go to an environment where I know women was going to be there, even though that's not my intention, and the same energy, because I haven't changed my mental yet. They say when your mental changes, your energy evolves around it. And that peace that I did not find was not there. So the devil kept sending beautiful devils in the blue dresses to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was biting biting every apple. I mean, every apple. It was to the point at my age, at 18, I already knew what type of woman I wanted. I didn't really care for the small shape. I love thick women. It was just all of those things. And I'm like, I'm 18 and I don't even know who the heck I am yet, but I know what I want out of a woman. Something ain't right here.
Right.
Something's not right here. In the midst of still counting money and selling drugs and selling guns and doing all of these things, but still making it pretty to look like I have a store and I'm okay, and I've never been locked up and never been in trouble. Of course I've been arrested, but I've never done too much time, and so I always was too busy trying to make it look pretty, just like molestation and pedophiling. And when I really looked at it at the whole scenario of my life, that's what it was, making my life pretty. When I really have problems and I need to face them, but it's like pedophiling. Because even the person that's doing the pedophiling is making it look pretty for the parents and the child.
Mm-hmm.
Until the parents are not around them, and then they're letting out who they really are. Instead of dealing with it, they let it out in the wrong way. And that's what I was doing. I mean, it was bad. And now I can look at it, it was an experience, but I would have... If I'm going to do these type of things, I would like to do it with a wife. And I don't expect
right.
these type of things with my wife, but because I'm more conservative now. But it's I'm talking about football stadiums, football practice fields, and high schools inside the class, getting caught by teachers and still going while I'm getting caught by the teachers all the way from getting hired, my mother getting hired at my high school, not necessarily because of my behavior, but it was because of my behavior. I kept good grades, but I was fighting and sexual things, and I mean, getting caught with oral, I mean, in public, I didn't care, bus stops, it was, and I'm like, wow, look at me. Only thing that I can think of And as like I said, still trying to become this man. It's like, wow, dude, you've been molested. You've been dead once at this time because I'm not into the adulthood. And you done had everything from $300,000 to $500,000. You done had all types of money, the women, and what are you doing with yourself yet? In the midst of this, too, I still did my community work. I still fed the homeless. I taught the kids like I when I first met you, off and on
right.
as a child, telling kids what was happening to me, but I'm walking off with a blunt in my mouth and smoking that memory away. And I'm not even smoking it away. I'm putting it in a fog because it's going to clear up and come back to me. That was the one thing. My abuse, molestation, everything, when it's telling me to say my prayers and go to sleep, it came back to me. But to them, I made it look pretty. And after graduating, and like I said, going through 17 into 18, doing this, 19 hit, and it was just a blur because of everything that I was doing with the sex and the drugs and the money. But I remember when 20 hit, and that's when it just hit me. The depression hit me more than a ton of bricks.
Wow.
And now it's not just I wasn't having sex or anything. I was so focused on this abuse, it depressed me to the thoughts of suicide, and I didn't try suicide yet. But I did indulge my life now into this music, writing the music out in poetry, but it wasn't helping. It just wasn't helping. I lost everything by the age of 20, all of the money, drugs. I mean, I fell off. One of the best things in my life, though, I'm glad it happened, but I fell off. While in the midst of falling off, a lot of murders end up happening, some happening in front of me, some happening outside of me, dealing related of me falling off. I was pretty much one of the guys that provided for everything, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, I can't do it. That 20 hit, I ended up getting a job, college related. I just couldn't focus. That passed, that whole blur again. And 21 hit, and that's when I told my mom that, you know, hey, I just got to talk to you. And it's about my molestation. And we need to figure out what can we do. And she said, son, I don't believe you. That day, mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys ever watched, I think it's called Paranormal Activity or the movie called The Ring or something, but it's like when the day turns into night, like in seconds. It was like everything turned black. Like that's not just the feeling, that's what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't black out, but I saw everything like black. And my whole 21 years, I basically stayed in a room. I stayed in a room. I knew what it was like to not take a bath for 2 and 3 weeks. Even though I knew what that was like too, in a way, from because of being in the streets and making it look pretty with my parents on drugs and then trying to change my clothes and send me to school without taking a bath. But now we're talking about just plain depression. And then I started understanding maybe what PTSD is because of the flashbacks. Depression is just a feeling. PTSD deals with a lot of flashbacks and triggers.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, I'm still going through the emotional abuse of my mother. So this is a loneliness that I understand when women say they feel like there's nothing that can do to them in their heart. Mind you, my mother is my world, and I don't understand why she treats me the way she is. But loneliness. We end up moving around 22. I end up meeting this girl, which is my wife now. I didn't see her no more until right before I turned 22. And I told her, you know, right then and there, too, because I knew what I want. I took a break, and she was this sun ray for me. Her energy was beautiful, and I knew I needed to talk to her. Within a week, I knew I wanted to be with her. And it just got crazy from then on out, completely. We went on our first date, and after she gave me a kiss, and she was still living with her mom, I didn't know because of my mindset of being from the hood, too. My first date with my wife was in a crack house.
Wow.
And that's how bad it was. We were sitting outside on a certain street where I'm from. And me and my cousin told her, hey, it's better if you just walk in the house and staying in instead of just standing out here. And I walked in with her, and it was a crack house, and it had a hole in the wall next to the house next door. And it was crackheads running each and out of every room and through the walls and trying to sell her computers. And that's when she just looked at me because of these stories that I was telling her from basically 0 to 21. She'd never believe me because my family also painted a picture that, my family last name is the Joneses. So I hope you get it from then on, but read between the lines. They were trying to keep up. And she started really seeing the lifestyle of, it just never fathomed on her, like, wow, I was in a crack house. And then the next date after that was right back there. And now it went from crack, and now you see crack heroin, PCP. You see people actually having convulsions. You see people, I think our second or third day when she saw somebody die right in front of us. And
wow.
Not necessarily like right in front, but it was just, you could see it.
And this is where, because here we go with our time, and I've written down where we've stopped. Because we have like probably a few more minutes before we have to sign out, mm-hmm. and I do not want you to get deep into it because now I'm like on the edge of my seat because I'm like want to know about the first date. I can't even imagine my first date being at a crack house. So I'm just like from that statement on intrigued. So, and I know we have probably about a couple of minutes. I do want to reiterate that next week we will have Mr. Sweetenbeck on for his close out because now we're at his adulthood with him and his wife. And,
and
I'm looking forward, like I said. Oh, then here we go. Once we get through with him, I am excited about listening to his wife's testimony because that's just what this is, a testimony. Because if you could meet Sweeten and put your eyes on this young man, you would not and could not. So I'm honestly picturing, as you're telling your story, I'm picturing you and then and what I met today. It's amazing.
Mm.
But I want to go ahead and close out before I get started. Feel free to contact me or Stephanie with questions. Stephanie's number is 817-320-2571. With any questions, comments, or survivor stories, the direct number to the organization is 214-454-2933. Our email address is wearesurvivorsfoundation@gmail.com. Our website is wearesurvivorsfoundation.org. I want to thank God for you listening. I pray that today on this show, not this show, another show, something was said that touches your heart. We are here to help you, support, guide, and listen to you and to uplift you. In the name of Jesus, we will always worship his holy name. God bless you and everyone that's listening. Thank you so much, Sweetness. Talk to you next week.
You too. Be blessed.
Mm-hmm.